Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, July 24th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Congressman Jared Huffman criticizes new legislation and its future impacts on California. Starlink suffers widespread outage, emergency services unaffected. And Fortuna seniors demand mobile home park rent control. So stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
The Orleans Complex fire reaches 18,855 acres with a 10% containment. Jordan Pangelinan brings today's update on the Orleans Complex per Six Rivers and Klamath National Forest press release for July 24th.
Firefighters worked directly to reinforce established lines for July 23rd near the Quail Flat up towards the Yellow Jacket Ridge. Crews actively worked to hold the line up and mop up down from the Yellow Jacket Ridge along Murderer's Gulch and along Sawyer's Bar Road. The fire continued burning from the previous night's firing operation in the upper portion of McNeil Creek. Helicopters assisted firefighters in these areas with bucket drops. Fire activity was minimal along the northwest portion of the fire. Firefighters will monitor and mop up along the northwestern edge of the fire and along the Salmon River. Additional containment was achieved near the Butler Flat. Today, firefighters will focus on reinforcing and mopping up containment lines along the Salmon River and the ridge going to Yellow Jacket Ridge, Murderer Creek, and the ridge above Know Nothing Creek. The fire area is under a red flag warning today with a 40% chance of scattered thunderstorms, bringing lightning, hail, and outflow winds up to 40 miles an hour. Maximum temperatures are expected to be in the 90s and minimum relative humidity with a 20%. The latest evacuation information can be found at protectgenesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. If you are in an evacuation order zone, leave immediately. This is a lawful order and is not only to protect your life, but the lives of a firefighter, law enforcement, and emergency medical personnel. For shelter information and resources related to the fire evacuations, please call 530-340-3539. Again, that's 530-340-3539. KMUD will continue to cover as we get more information. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
In a recent interview, California Congressman Jared Huffman described the Big Beautiful Bill that passed on July 4th as the Big Ugly Law and critiqued its impact on healthcare, the environment, and bipartisan governance during this administration. Congressman Huffman once described it as one of the most damaging budget proposals in recent history, with its sweeping cuts to Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. We asked how Huffman sees this playing out, not only in the district he represents, District 2, but also in the whole of the United States.
So we now have to call it the Big Ugly Law, because Donald Trump signed it into law on July 4th. And so what will it do? Well, first of all, it is going to really undermine our healthcare system. Not just the cuts, the direct cuts to Medicaid, but what it's going to do to the Affordable Care Act, causing premiums for thousands and thousands of my constituents to perhaps triple. And the ripple effects throughout the healthcare system, because you can't look at any one of these things in isolation. They are slashing the Veterans Administration. They are throwing 12 million people off of health care for Medicaid. They have created such a hole in the deficit that it's going to trigger what we call the sequester, and that will create a $500 billion cut to Medicare. So, you know, it's every bit as bad as you have heard. Now, when will some of this harm begin to take effect? A lot of it will be next year. But I think you will begin to see some hospitals, rural hospitals in particular, but also health clinics and, you know, others probably start to announce really painful cuts and layoffs and reductions in service well before that, because they have to plan ahead. So that the individual cuts, you know, work requirements and other things that people would feel directly are going to be closer to the election next year. That's because these guys, you know, very politically are trying to delay the pain of what they're doing and hope that people won't notice when they vote next year.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates that the changes caused by the policy will result in 16 million more uninsured Americans in the year 2034 than otherwise would be the case. If enhanced premium tax credits for the Affordable Care Act marketplace coverage expire at the end of 2025, it will lead to the increase of out-of-pocket premiums substantially and likely lead to millions of people dropping their coverage. Initially, the bill had a provision that would have allowed for the sale of millions of acres of public lands. That provision was shot down after opposition from both sides of the aisle. As a ranking member on the Natural Resources Committee, Huffman explains the kinds of threats to natural resources still remaining and what the public should look out for.
Yes, so I told you about the healthcare impact. That's a big part of this big, ugly law. The environmental impacts are another, and it's bad. We're glad that we defeated a proposal by Senator Mike Lee to sell off millions of acres, or millions and millions of acres of public land, just a liquidation of our public lands. But those proposals are still kicking around, and they will continue to try. What was left, though, was still really bad, a bunch of mandatory oil and gas auctions under terms that are practically giving away vast areas of our public lands in the Arctic and in other parts of the country, and huge sections of the outer continental shelf in the ocean for new drilling, including in the Arctic, including really pristine places like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So in addition to these giveaways, you've got these special new rules, pay-to-play permitting, where if developers, big oil developers in particular can afford to pay a little bit to the administration, they get a fast track permit. Things like that, things that make it very hard to legally challenge any of these things that cut out tribes from consultation, communities from the public input process. So it's probably, I've called it the worst environmental bill in the history of the Congress. I do think that still is a very fair description of what it does. And then the last thing, in addition to all of this harm for healthcare and the environment, it is all in service of tax cuts to the rich. So, we're being told that it is about reducing the debt and the deficit. It increases the debt and the deficit, and it does all of this simply to give a few new tax giveaways to billionaires.
Under the bill, the average family earning less than $50,000 a year would get under $300 in tax cuts in 2027, while the average tax filer earning $1 million or more a year would receive about $90,000 in tax breaks. Despite this, when promoting the bill, the Trump administration heavily advertised the working family tax cuts. This bill also affects the 17 million children who currently don't get the full $2,000 child tax credit because their families' incomes are too low to get anything from the $500 per child increase on the child tax credit. Following up the passing of the One Big Beautiful Bill, on July 18th, Congress passed the Rescissions Act of 2025, which cut $9 billion in previously approved funding to public broadcasting and foreign aid spending. This rescission package has yet to be signed into law as of recording. The Nonpartisan Center on Budget and Policy Priorities warned that the package could have lasting damage to bipartisan governance, stating that it sets a dangerous precedent undermining Congress's constitutional power of the purse and making bipartisan budget agreements far more difficult to achieve. Huffman states his feelings on the concern and his thought on the long-term impacts.
I very much share the concern. As dysfunctional as this place is, there is a Herculean effort made every single year to come up with a budget, all of the 12 appropriation bills that kind of make up our federal discretionary spending, and to do that in ways that has both Democratic and Republican support. It's not always successful, but there is an effort that's made, and quite often these funding bills, from the Interior Appropriations Bill to the VA and Military Construction Appropriations Bills to the Defense Appropriations Bills, all these things usually have at least some bipartisan support. And when you do that effort and then turn around and just cut a side deal that wipes away the Democratic stuff that's in there, in a deal with the president, I mean, you're sending a message that you don't even want to honor the spirit of bipartisanship. And so that's pretty toxic. It's going to make it very hard to get back to a place where we try to solve problems together.
In 2024, Huffman started the Stop Project 2025 Task Force, along with other lawmakers, to counter the detailed plan drafted by the Heritage Foundation to reshape the federal government and consolidate executive power in favor of right-wing policies. The rescissions package was criticized for not being transparent enough about what was being cut before being pushed to vote. Huffman discusses the similarities between Project 2025 and the lack of transparency with the bill.
Oh, goodness. It's not even, I don't know that parallel is the right word. This is Project 2025 in real time. And then some. It's like, hold my beer. You know, he's going way beyond what he proposed. You know, Russ Vogt, the OMB director right now, is one of the principal architects of Project 2025. And Donald Trump swore up and down once you know, this became deeply unpopular with the American people, that it was not his plan. He doesn't know anything about it. But they are absolutely working their way through all of the worst elements of Project 2025, going across the federal government to look for everything that they can shut down or spin off and privatize. You know, liquidation of public lands was one of those ideas from Project 2025, and I know they're going to keep trying to do that. But, you know, shutting down the Department of Education, all of these radical changes in, you know, the Department of Health and Human Services, the attempt to spin off and privatize the National Weather Service, you know, the first step is, of course, all of the cuts that they're moving through this rescission package for many of these things.
As the political landscape continues to shift, Congressman Huffman's critiques highlight the growing concern for the future of bipartisan cooperation, healthcare accessibility, and environmental protections. For more information on Huffman's goals and missions for California District 2, visit huffman.house.gov. Thousands of Starlink users across multiple regions experienced a widespread outage Thursday, leaving many without internet access. Jordan Pangelinan reports.
Thursday afternoon, Elon Musk's satellite internet company Starlink experienced a widespread service outage, prompting concern among users. In a post on X, Starlink stated, in quote, "Starlink is currently in a network outage and we are currently implementing a solution. We appreciate your patience and we will share an update once this issue is resolved," end quote. It's reported to be a global outage, according to the Kiev Independent, end quote. The Ukrainian military confirmed the outage on the Telegram, stating that Starlink terminals were down and connectivity was lost along the front lines, end quote. In a brief interview with KMUD News, Ryan Derby, the emergency manager for the County of Humboldt at the Office of Emergency Services, confirmed.
"We received a question about the Starlink outage today, and I'm just letting everyone know that this has not impacted the Office of Emergency Services' ability to monitor and track incidents, issue emergency alerts, or hasn't disrupted our day-to-day operations in any way. Right now, we haven't seen a whole lot of updates on the outage. It seems like it's system-wide, but the company's working on a solution, so hopefully we'll see a restoration sometime in the very near future."
KMUD News also reached out to Cal Fire, who confirmed they are in a testing phase with Starlink Communications, but do not rely on its services. Some government agencies do use Starlink, but not as an only source for information. Manny Machado from Caltrans said, "Construction does use Starlink, however it depends on the project. If there is no cell phone service and in a remote area, then Starlink is an option. It is being used on Route 36 communications with no current impacts. Mobile radios are available if they're needed." Elon Musk addressed the situation on X, assuring users, in quotes, "service will be restored shortly. Sorry for the outage. SpaceX will remedy the root cause to ensure it doesn't happen again." Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
Residents of a Fortuna mobile home park are asking the city council to consider rent control, and a workshop on it will happen soon. Daniel Mintz reports.
Fortuna will hire an outside attorney to analyze a potential mobile home rent control ordinance as requested by numerous residents of a mobile home park for seniors. At the July 21st Fortuna City Council meeting, residents of Royal Crest Mobile Home Estates on Crest Drive said rent increases have been unfair, and they implored the council to put a mobile home park rent control ordinance on an agenda next month. Royal Crest is a 205-space mobile home park for seniors managed by the Orangevale-based Stores Management Company. Residents and those supporting them said a rent control ordinance is needed to temper what they described as an exploitational approach to rent pricing, as stated here by park resident Lane Moon.
Fortuna's manufactured park owners are non-local multimillionaires taking money out of Fortuna. Stores and investors are not part of the local economy. They're not part of residents of Fortuna. Members of Fortuna Chamber of Commerce, and Stores is not part of the Better Business Bureau. By the City Council not adopting an RSO, they are choosing to support non-local multimillionaires instead of supporting 387 voting senior citizens who helped get them elected. People are now facing a situation where, with the next rent increase, they're unsure how they'll afford both the higher rent and essentials like medications or heat. A major issue is the uncertainty. We never know how much the rent will go up, making it hard to live sustainably on a fixed income.
Moon and other residents said rents on Royal Crest mobile home spaces have increased 21.4% in the last 4 years. Royal Crest resident Lana Craig noted the council's recent approval of a World Elder Abuse Awareness Day proclamation and likened the rent hike situation to elder abuse. Deborah Thomas, also a Royal Crest resident, said her rent increase has exceeded her ability to pay other expenses, including chemotherapy, and she asked for help.
I've dedicated my life to volunteering to helping others in our community in too many ways to count. Tonight, I need to count on you, Fortuna City Council. I'm sorry, I'm going to get upset. I bought my last home at Royal Crest, the very last home that I could afford. And when I moved in there, nobody told me that they would be raising the rents. And I was retired, and I was living on a very small pension, and I was living well. I could afford my rent. It was a little over $600, and today it's $822. And I had to go back to work full-time, and 9 months ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And if I have any emergency in my life, like my car has been broken for a month, I've had to walk to work. I am thinking about not even doing chemo because I can't afford to be sick, because I can't be homeless. I don't have anywhere to go. And we are all in that position. And I've really got off base on what I was trying to say to you, but what I really want you to do is to please put us on the agenda.
Members of the Humboldt Tenants Union also vouched for rent control. But Salo Londano of the Western Manufactured Housing Communities Association advocacy group said Royal Crest has, quote, a rental assistance program for residents who may struggle to pay rent, and he warned against approving rent control.
The owners and managers of the community under the scope tonight have been completely open to communication with the council in case anyone has any questions. They have sent you letters laying out the facts, refuting the false allegations made via a news story as well as here tonight, and made themselves available to council members or staff. I speak from experience in other areas of California that have gone in the direction the residents' advocates are asking you to move Fortuna against. There's a very good reason that no respectable economist advocates for rent control. It fails at its advertised goal, but it also artificially distorts the market while also creating a combative relationship between residents, the city, and housing providers. The result is a never-ending conflict in an environment in which issues that could be resolved with a phone call instead often end up in court, causing unnecessary costs for everybody involved. Currently, residents of this community are able to resell their mobile units, which are depreciating assets, for far more than they paid for. Meanwhile, Fortuna housing providers are able to reinvest in these communities, keeping them safe and enjoyable places to live.
Londano referred to a letter to the city from an attorney representing the park's owner. The letter refutes the descriptions of the owner as a large corporation and says hundreds of thousands of dollars has been spent on park improvements over the last 5 years, and rent increases have been comparable to the consumer price index. His comments were met with a loud round of boos from the audience. Second District County Supervisor Michelle Bushnell said she has a unique situation because she owns a trailer in Royal Crest that her sister lives in, but she offered to, quote, assist in any way I can for these folks. Council members supported consideration of mobile home park rent control. City Manager Amy Nilsson said hiring attorneys who specialize in it will be necessary, and a first step could be to hold a workshop on it. With Councilmember Carlos Diaz absent, the council authorized that, leaving the date unspecified. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In national news, the UN Security Council debates Gaza crisis amid questions over role of UN humanitarian law. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The UN Security Council members discussed Israel's military actions and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza with some spirited and passionate debate and accusations, mostly in the form of Israel and the United States versus the rest of the world. The meeting kicked off with a briefing by Mohammed Khalid Khairi, Assistant Secretary General for the Middle East, Asia, and the Pacific. He said it's long past time for the fighting to end, for hostages to return home, for humanitarian aid, and for recovery and reconstruction.
While talks are ongoing, the horrific situation in Gaza continues to deteriorate, with Israeli military operations and hostilities expanding throughout the strip and the human toll mounting by the hour. This nightmare of historic proportions must end immediately.
Next to speak was the permanent representative of the Observer State of Palestine, who opened his remarks by telling some of the 15 people who have starved to death in the last 24 hours. He says Israel is trying to turn Gaza into a land without people through genocide and ethnic cleansing.
But make no mistake, the real target is the 2 million Palestinians who remain in Gaza. For Israel, their destruction is required for its scheme to take over the land.
He asked the Security Council, what do we tell the people of Gaza? Should we read them strong statements or resolutions adopted by the UN?
Red lines are useless if they can be crossed over and over again without consequences. Rules are worthless if we are not willing to sanction their breach. Words are meaningless if they are not followed by action. We need you to act, and act now.
Israel's permanent representative took a quite different approach.
For Hamas, the suffering of its own people is their greatest weapon. The longer the misery continues, the longer they can feed it into their propaganda machine.
He blasted the UN as biased, taking particular aim at the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, and he boasted of Israel's humanitarian aid in Gaza.
In other words, we are doing the work of the United Nations. While Israel dismantles terror networks and protects innocent lives, what does the UN do? It clings to its political agenda. It protects its bias. It defends the agencies that have long abandoned neutrality.
The representative of Pakistan, who also chaired the meeting, called the Palestine question a litmus test for the credibility of the UN Security Council and for the integrity of international law.
What we have witnessed in Gaza for the last 22 months is not just a humanitarian catastrophe, but a collapse of humanity itself. Gaza has become a graveyard for innocent lives as well as for the international law, particularly the international humanitarian law.
Amid all the debate and accusations, the representatives of Palestine and Israel seemed to agree on one thing. The world is watching. The question now is, what is the world going to do? Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Many clean energy initiatives across the country have been hit hard with federal funding freezes and abrupt cuts in recent months. But two villages in Alaska are considering a project that would harness the energy of ocean waves, potentially for the first time in the U.S. Ayolna Naiden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Waves gently hit the shores of Kachemak Bay as ravens croak above on a cloudy night in July. The small village of Port Graham is nested here at the southern tip of the Kenai Peninsula. the village may soon convert wave energy into electricity. Danielle Malchev is the first chief of Port Graham.
I have a lot of hope that this is going to be something great for our community.
Chugachmute is a consortium that serves native tribes, including Port Graham and its neighbor, Nanwalik. The consortium announced it had partnered with an Australia-based company, Carnegie Clean Energy, in May. Carnegie has several wave energy projects across the world, but this would be the company's first commercial installment in the U.S. That's according to Louise Richardson, Carnegie's commercial analyst.
One thing at Carnegie that we hope our technology will be able to service in the future is remote communities and isolated communities that might not have access to other forms of renewable energy options.
Port Graham and Nanwalik have no roads connecting them to the rest of the state. Energy costs there are high because the villages are at the edge of the grid and diesel for a backup generator comes on a barge. The electrical lines running from Homer are several decades old, don't have enough capacity, and are unreliable. Malchev says the village loses power several times a month in winter and once every few months in summer.
We have to use satellite phones if our power is out, which isn't very convenient when you're trying to relay and talk to doctors in the ER and you're dealing with a patient.
Malchev says more reliable electricity from wave energy could solve some of those issues. And ideally, the villages can sell any extra energy back to the grid and use that revenue on healthcare and education. The plan is to place a wave energy device offshore from Port Graham. Permitting, testing, and installation of the project might take close to 5 years. In Anchorage, I am Alona Naidin.
Back in February, President Trump tapped a Navajo man to become the next Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the nominee is one step closer to being sworn in as a top-ranking official, second only to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum.
William Billy Kirkland III was Special Assistant to the President and Deputy Director of Intergovernmental Affairs during Trump's first term. In his recent Senate confirmation hearing, Kirkland took credit for helping Trump establish Operation Lady Justice, a federal task force on missing and murdered indigenous peoples, and for inviting the Navajo Code Talkers to the Oval Office.
I think that President Trump and Secretary Burgum love and appreciate and respect Indian country. I think they care.
New Mexico Senator Ben Ray Lujan disagreed.
Do you think the administration cutting billions from national programs that support Indian country, Native American communities' lives lives up to America's trust responsibility?
Sir, I look forward, once confirmed, to working with you, your staff, this committee, and most importantly, tribal leaders to prioritize the money that Congress appropriates for the Office of Indian Affairs to make sure it's best and most wisely invested.
If confirmed, Kirkland would be responsible for upholding tribal trusts and treaty obligations on behalf of the federal government. The Senate's August recess may be canceled to finish confirming dozens of Trump nominees. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And that's all for tonight's broadcast. And that's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Lisa Music. And thanks to our reporters, Jordan Pangelinan, Daniel Mintz, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on kmud.org, now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.